Welcome to Voter Information, the show that looks at elections in the city, the state, and the nation. This is your election guru, Mark Braun here. Glad you could join us today. And so I remind you, you're listening to a recording provided for the use of those who are blind or print impaired. Materials or items read in Ayers, LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Okay. So we're going to be doing presidential stuff this week. There are a couple of things that we need to take care of beforehand, starting with, yep, you guessed it, an obituary. From the Los Angeles Times, Thursday, January 1st, 2026, Ben Nighthorse Campbell, 1933 to 2025, former senator who advocated for Native Americans, from the Associated Press. Ben Nighthorse Campbell, the former senator and U.S. representative of Colorado known for his passionate advocacy of Native American issues, died Tuesday. He was 92. Campbell died of natural causes, surrounded by his family. His daughter, Shannon Campbell, confirmed through the Associated Press. Campbell, a Democrat who stunned his party by joining the Republican Party, stood out in Congress as much for his unconventional dress, cowboy boots, bolo ties, and ponytail, as his defense of children's rights, organized labor, and fiscal conservatism. A member of the Northern Cheyenne tribe, Campbell said his ancestors were among more than 150 Native Americans, mostly women, children, and elderly men, killed by U.S. soldiers while camped under a flag of truce on November 29, 1864. He served three terms in the House, starting in 1987. He then served two terms in the Senate from 1993 to 2005. Among his accomplishments was helping sponsor legislation upgrading the Great Sand Dunes National Monument in southern Colorado to a national park. He was a master jeweler with a reputation far beyond the boundaries of Colorado, said Colorado Senator John Hickenlooper on X. I will not forget his acts of kindness. He will be sorely missed. The motorcycle-riding lawmaker and cattle rancher was considered a maverick even before he abruptly switched to the Republican Party in March of 1985, angry with Democrats for killing a balanced budget amendment in the Senate. His switch outraged Democratic leaders who was considered a coup for the GOP. "I get hammered from the extremes," he said shortly afterward. "I'm always willing to listen, but I just don't think you can be all things to all people, no matter which party you're in." Considered a shoo-in for a third Senate term, Campbell stunned supporters when he dropped out of the race in 2004 after a health scare. "I thought it was a heart attack. It wasn't," said Campbell. "But when I was lying on that table in the hospital looking up at all those doctors' faces, I decided then, do I really need to do this 6 more years after I've been gone so much from home? I have 2 children I didn't get to see grow up, quite frankly." He retired to focus on the Native American jewelry that helped make him wealthy and was displayed at the Smithsonian Institution's National Museum of the American Indian. He also worked on a line of outdoor gear with California-based Kiva Designs and became a senior policy advisor with the powerhouse law firm of Holland & Knight in Washington. Campbell found Ben Nighthorse Consultants, which focused on federal policy, including Native American affairs and natural resources. The former senator also drove the Capitol Christmas tree across the country to Washington, D.C. on several occasions. "He was truly one of a kind, and I am thinking of his family in the wake of his loss," said Colorado Representative Diana DeGetty on X. In 1982, he was planning to deliver his jewelry to California, but weather grounded his plane. He was killing time in the southern Colorado city of Durango when he went to a county Democratic meeting and wound up giving a speech for a friend running for sheriff. Democrats were looking for someone to challenge a GOP legislative candidate and sounded out Campbell during the meeting. "Like a fish, I was hooked," he said. His opponent, Don Whalen, was a popular former college president who looked like he was out of a Brooks Brothers catalog, Campbell recalled. "I don't think anybody gave me any kind of a chance. I just think I expended a whole lot of energy to prove them wrong." Campbell hit the streets, walking door-to-door, talking to people. He recalled leaving a note at a house in Cortez, Colorado, when he heard a car roar into the driveway. The driver jumped out, tire iron in hand, and screamed that Campbell couldn't have his furniture. "Aren't you the repossession company?" the man asked. "I said, no, man. I'm just running for office. We got to talking, and I think the guy voted for me." Campbell went on to win and never lost an election thereafter, moving from the Colorado House to the U.S. House and then the Senate. Born April 13, 1933 in Auburn, California, Campbell served in the Air Force in Korea from 1951 to 53 and received a bachelor's degree from San Jose State University in 1957. He attended Meiji University in Tokyo from 1960 to 64, was captain of the U.S. judo team in the 1964 Olympics, and won a gold medal in the Pan American Games. Campbell once called then Interior Secretary Bruce Babbitt a fork-tongued snake for opposing a water project near Ignacio, Colorado, which Campbell promoted as a way to honor the water rights of the Southern Ute and Ute Mountain Ute tribes. He clashed with environmentalists on everything, from mining law and grazing reforms to setting aside land for national monuments. Despite all this, or perhaps because of it, voters loved him. In 1998, Campbell won re-election to the Senate by routing Democrat Dottie Land despite his switch to the GOP. He was the only Native American in the Senate at the time. He said he was criticized as a Democrat for voting with Republicans and then pilloried by some newspapers for his stances after the switch. It didn't change me. I didn't change my voting record. For instance, I had a sterling voting record as a Democrat on labor. I still do as a Republican. And on minorities and women's issues, he said. Campbell said his values, liberal on social issues, conservative on fiscal ones, were shaped by his life. Children's causes were dear to him because he and his sister spent time in an orphanage when his father was in jail and his mother had tuberculosis. Organized labor won his backing because he hooked up with the Teamsters and learned to drive a truck, and learning to drive a truck got him out of the California tomato fields. His time as a Sacramento County Sheriff's Deputy in California made him a law enforcement advocate. He decided to retire from politics, Campbell said. His decision to retire from politics, Campbell said, had nothing to do with allegations that Jeannie Kotnick, his former chief of staff, solicited kickbacks from another staffer, and that his office lobbied for a contract for a technology company with ties to the former senator. He referred both matters to the Senate Ethics Committee. In 2007, Kotnick pleaded guilty to a federal charge of not reporting $2,000 in income. I guess there was some disappointment with those charges, Campbell said, but a lot of things happen in Washington that disappoint you. You just have to get over them because every day there's a new crisis to deal with. That was Ben Nighthorse Campbell, 1933 to 2025, former senator who advocated for Native Americans, from the Associated Press, out of the Los Angeles Times, Thursday, January 1st, 2026. All right, one more little thing. An actual special state Senate election that happened in Iowa. From the Nation's section of the Los Angeles Times, Thursday, January 1st, 2026, Democrat wins key Iowa state Senate race, by Hannah Schoenbaum and Hannah Figgerhut. Des Moines. Democrat Renee Hardman was elected to the Iowa State Senate on Tuesday in a year-end special election, denying Republicans from reclaiming two-thirds control of the chamber. Hardman bested Republican Lucas Lofton by an overwhelming margin to win a seat representing parts of the Des Moines suburbs. The seat became vacant after the October 6 death of State Senator Claire Selsey, a Democrat. Hardin, the chief executive of Nonprofit Lutheran Services of Iowa and a member of the West Des Moines City Council, becomes the first black woman elected to the 50-member Senate. I want to recognize that while my name was the one on the ballot, this race was never just about me, Hardin told a room of supporters in West Des Moines after declaring victory. With 99% of votes counted, Hardman led by about 43 percentage points. Her win is latest in a string of special election victories for Iowa Democrats, who flipped two Senate seats this year to break up a supermajority that had all allowed Republicans to easily confirm GOP Governor Kim Reynolds' appointments to state agencies and commissions. Democrat Mike Zimmer first flipped a seat in January, winning a district that had strongly favored Republican President Trump in the 2024 election. In August, Democrat Caitlin Dre handily defeated her GOP opponent in the Republican stronghold of northwestern Iowa, giving Democrats 17 seats to Republicans' 33. Selsey's death brought that down to 16. Republicans would have regained two-thirds control with a Lofton victory Tuesday. Without a supermajority, the party will need to get support from at least one Democrat to approve Reynolds' nominees. The GOP still has significant majorities in both legislative chambers. Ken Martin, chair of the Democratic National Committee, called Hardeman's victory a major check in Republican power. With the last special election of the year now decided, one thing is clear. 2025 was the year of Democratic victories and overperformance, and Democrats are on track for big midterm elections, Martin said. Since November, the party dominated the first major elections since Trump returned to the White House, notably winning governor's races in Virginia and New Jersey. Democrats also held on to a Kentucky state Senate election this month in a special election. Although Republican Matt Van Epps won a Tennessee special election for a U.S. House seat, the relatively slim margin of victory gave Democrats hope for next year's midterms. The party must net three House seats in 2026 to reclaim the majority and impede Trump's agenda. Iowa GOP Chairman Jeff Kaufman applauded Lofton and his supporters for putting up a fight in what he described as a very tough district. Democrats outnumber Republicans by about 3,300 voters, or 37% to 30%. Although we fell short this time, the Republican Party of Iowa remains laser-focused on expanding our majorities in the Iowa legislature and keeping Iowa ruby red, Kaufman said. The Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee pledged Tuesday to help defend the party's gains in Iowa and prevent the return of a GOP supermajority next year. That was Democrat Wins Key Iowa State Senate Race by Hannah Schoenbaum and Hannah Fingerhut from the Nation section of the Los Angeles Times, Thursday, January 1, 2026. Schoenbaum and Fingerhut write for the Associated Press. Schoenbaum reported from Salt Lake City. All right, now on to presidential stuff. And a couple of articles regarding the president's current approval ratings, at least towards the end of the year. From the Los Angeles Times, Friday, December 12, 2025, economy sinking Trump's ratings. His 31% approval is his lowest yet. Poll finds he slipped on crime and immigration too, by Lindley Sanders and Will Weissert. Washington. President Trump's approval numbers on the economy and immigration have fallen substantially since March, according to a new AP NORC poll, the latest indication that two signature issues that got him elected barely a year ago could be turning into liabilities as his party begins to gear up for the 2026 midterms. Only 31% of the U.S. adults now approve of how Trump is handling the economy, the poll from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research finds. That's down from 40% in March and marks the lowest economic approval he has registered in an AP NORC poll in his first or second term. The Republican president has also struggled to recover from public blowback on other issues, such as his management of the federal government, and has not seen an approval bump even after congressional Democrats in effect capitulated to end a record-long government shutdown last month. Perhaps most worryingly for Trump, who has become increasingly synonymous with his party, is that he slipped on issues that were major strengths. Just a few months ago, 53% of Americans approved of Trump's handling of crime, but that has fallen to 43% in the new poll. There has been a similar decline on immigration from 49% approval in March to 38% now. The new poll starkly illustrates how Trump has struggled to hold on to political wins since his return to office. Even border security, an issue on which his approval remains relatively high, has declined slightly in recent months. The good news for Trump is that his overall approval hasn't fallen below as steeply. The new poll found that 36% of Americans approve of the way he's handling his job as president, which is down slightly from 42% in March. That signals that even if some people aren't happy with elements of his approach, they might not be ready to say he's doing a bad job as president. And although discontent is increasing among Republicans on certain issues, they're largely still behind him. Republicans are more unhappy with Trump's performance on the economy than they were in the first few months of his term. About 7 in 10 Republicans, 69%, approve of how Trump is handling the economy in the December poll, a decline from 78% in March. Larry Reynolds, a 74-year-old retiree and Republican voter from Wadsworth, Ohio, said he believes in Trump's plan to impose import duties on U.S. trade partners, but thinks rates have spiraled too high, creating a vicious cycle now where they aren't really justifying the tariffs. Reynolds said he also believes that inflation became a problem during the COVID-19 pandemic and that the economy won't quickly recover, regardless of what Trump does. I don't think it'll be anything really soon. I think it's just going to take time, he said. Trump's base is still largely behind him, which was not always the case for his predecessor, President Biden, a Democrat. In the summer of 2022, only about half of Democrats approved of how Biden was handling the economy. Shortly before he withdrew from the 2024 presidential race 2 years later, that had risen to about two-thirds of Democrats. More broadly, though, there's no sign that Americans think the economy has improved since Trump took over. About two-thirds of U.S. adults, 68%, continue to say the country's economy is poor. That's unchanged from the last time the question was asked in October, and it's broadly in line with views throughout Biden's last year in office. Trump's approval ratings on immigration have declined since March, but border security remains a relatively strong issue for him. Half of U.S. adults, 50%, approve of how he's handling border security, which is just slightly lower than the 55% who approved in September. The president's relative strength on border security is partially driven by Democrats and independents. About one-third of independents, 36%, approve of Trump on the border, and 26% approve on immigration. Jim Rollins, an 82-year-old independent in Macon, Georgia, said he believes that when it comes to closing the border, Trump has done a good job, but he hopes the administration will rethink its mass deportation efforts. Taking people out of kindergarten and people going home for Thanksgiving, taking them off a plane, if they are criminals, sure, said Rollins, who said he supported Trump in his first election but not since then. But the percentages, based on the government's own statistics, say that they're not criminals. They just didn't register, and maybe they sneaked across the border, and they've been here for 15 years. Other polls have shown it's more popular to increase border security than to deport immigrants, even those who are living in the country illegally. Nearly half of Americans said increasing security at the U.S.-Mexico border should be a high priority for the government in AP NORC polling from September. Only about 3 in 10 said the same about deporting immigrants in the U.S. illegally. Shaniqua Copeland, a 30-year-old independent and home health aide in St. Augustine, Florida, said she approves of Trump's overall handling of the presidency, but believes his immigration actions have gone too far, especially when it comes to masked federal agents leading large raids. Now they're just picking up anybody, Copeland said. They're just like pick-up people grabbing anybody. It's crazy. About 3 in 10 U.S. adults approve of how Trump is handling health care, down slightly from November. The new poll was conducted in early December as Trump and Congress struggled to find a bipartisan deal for extending the Affordable Care Act subsidies that will expire at the end of this month. That health care fight was also the source of the recent government shutdown. About one-third of U.S. adults, 35%, approve of how Trump is managing the federal government, down from 43% in March. But some Americans may see others at fault for the country's problems, besides Trump. Copeland is unhappy with the healthcare system and thinks things are getting worse, but is unsure whether to blame Trump or Biden. A couple of years ago, I could find a dentist and it would be easy. Now I have a different healthcare provider, and it's like so hard to find a dental plan with them, she said. And the people that do take that insurance, they have so many scheduled out far appointments because it's so many people on it. That was Economy Sinks Trump's Ratings by Lindley Sanders and Will Weissert from the Los Angeles Times, Friday, December 12, 2025. Sanders and Weissert write for the Associated Press. The AP NORC poll of 1,146 adults was conducted December 4th through the 8th using a sample drawn from NORC's probability-based AmeriSpeak panel, which is designed to be representative of the U.S. population. The margin of sampling error for adults overall is plus or minus 4 percentage points. All right, here is another one from the perspective section of the Los Angeles Times, Friday, December 19, 2025. Trump's ratings fall as supporters wrestle with costs, by Doyle McManus. Washington. President Trump made dozens of promises when he campaigned to retake the White House last year, from boosting economic growth to banning transgender athletes from girls' sports. But one pledge stood out as the most important in many voters' eyes. Trump said he would not only bring inflation under control, but push grocery and energy prices back down. Starting the day I take the oath of office, I will rapidly drive prices down and we will make America affordable again, he said in 2024. Your prices are going to come tumbling down, your gasoline is going to come tumbling down, and your health bills and cooling bills are going to be coming down. He hasn't delivered. Gasoline and eggs are cheaper than they were a year ago, but most other prices are still rising, including grocery and electricity. The Labor Department estimated Thursday that inflation is running at 2.7%, only a little better than the 3% Trump inherited from Joe Biden. Electricity was up 6.9%. And that has given the president a major political problem. Many of the voters who backed him last year are losing faith. I voted for Trump in 2024 because he was promising America first, and he was promising a better economy. Ib Biad, a nurse in Texas, said on a focus group podcast hosted by Bulwark publisher Sarah Longwell, it feels like all those promises have been broken. Since Inauguration Day, the president's job approval has declined from 52 to 43% in the polling average calculated by statistician Nate Silver. Approval for Trump's performance on the economy, once one of his strongest points, has sunk even lower to 39%. That's dangerous territory for a president who hopes to help his party keep its narrow majority in elections for the House of Representatives next year. To Republican pollsters and strategists, the reasons for Trump's slump are clear. He overpromised last year, and now he's underperforming. The most important reasons he won in 2024 were his promises to bring inflation down and juice the economy, Republican pollster Whit Aries said. That's the reason he won so many voters who traditionally had supported Democrats, including Hispanics. But he hasn't been able to deliver. Inflation has moderated, but it hasn't gone backward. Last week, after deriding complaints about affordability as a Democrat hoax, Trump belatedly launched a campaign to convince voters that he's at work fixing the problem. But at his first stop, a rally in Pennsylvania, he continued arguing that the economy is already in great shape. Our prices are coming down tremendously, he insisted. You're doing better than you've ever done, he said, implicitly dismissing voters' concerns. He urged families to cope with high tariffs by cutting back. You know you can't give up certain products, he said. You don't need $37 for your daughter. Two or three is nice, but you don't need $37. Earlier, in an interview with Politico, Trump was asked what grade he would give the economy. A++++, he said. On Wednesday, the president took another swing at the issue in a nationally televised speech, but his message was basically the same. One year ago, our country was dead. We were absolutely dead, he said. Now we're the hottest country anywhere in the world. Inflation has stopped, wages are up, prices are down. Republican pollster David Winston, who has advised GOP members of Congress, said the president has more work to do to win back voters who supported him in 2024 but are now disenchanted. When families are paying the price for a hamburger that they used to pay for steak, there's a problem, and there's no sugarcoating it, he said. President's statements that we have no inflation and our groceries are down have flown in the face of voters' reality. Another problem for Trump, pollsters said, is that many voters believe his tariffs are pushing prices higher, making the president part of the problem, not part of the solution. A YouGov poll in November found that 77% of voters believe tariffs contribute to inflationary pressures. Trump's popularity hasn't dropped through the floor. He still has the allegiance of his fiercely loyal base. He is at his lowest point of his second term so far, but he is well within the range of his job approval in the first term, Aries said. Still, he has lost significant chunks of support among independent voters, young people, and Latinos, three of the swing voter groups who put him over the top in 2024. Inflation isn't the only issue that has dented his standing. He promised to lead the economy to a golden age, but growth has been uneven. Unemployment rose in November to 4.6%, the highest level in more than 4 years. He promised massive tax cuts for the middle class, but most voters say they don't believe his tax cut bill brought them any benefit. It's hard to convince people that they got a tax break, but nobody's tax rates were actually cut, Aries noted. He kept his promise to launch the largest deportation campaign in U.S. history, but many voters complained that he has broken his promise to focus on violent criminals. In Silver's average, approval of his immigration policies dropped from 52% in January to 45% now. A Pew Research Center survey in October found that 53% of adults, including 71% of Latinos, think the administration has ordered too many deportations. However, most voters approve of Trump's measures on border security. Republican pollsters and strategists said they believe Trump can reverse his downward momentum before November's congressional election, but it may not be easy. You look at what voters care about most, and you offer policies to address those issues, GOP strategist Alex Conant suggested. That starts with prices. So you talk about permitting reform, energy prices, AI, artificial intelligence, and legislation to address health care, housing, and tax cuts. You could call it the Affordability Act. A laser focus on the economy and the cost of living is job one, GOP pollster Winston said. His policies on regulation, energy, and taxes should have a positive impact, but the White House needs to emphasize them on a more consistent basis. People voted for change in 2024, he warned. If they don't get it, if inflation doesn't begin to recede, they may vote for a change again in 2026. That was Trump's Ratings Fall as Supporters Wrestle with Costs by Doyle McManus from the Perspective section of the Los Angeles Times, Friday, December 19, 2025. So let's switch to a possible candidate for president in 28, our own Gavin Newsom. This is from the Perspective section of the Los Angeles Times, Sunday, November 16, 2025, Sizing Up the Prospects for Newsom in 2028 by Anita Chabria and Mark C. Baraback, columnists. The 2028 presidential election is more than 1,000 days away, but you'd hardly know it from all the speculation and anticipation that's swirling from Sacramento to the Washington Beltway. Standing at the center of attention is California Governor Gavin Newsom, fresh off his big victory on Proposition 50, the back-at-ya ballot measure that gerrymandered the state's congressional map to boost Democrats and offset a power grab by Texas Republicans. Newsom is bidding for the White House, and has been doing so for the better part of a year, though we won't say it out loud. Is Newsom the Democratic frontrunner or a mere flash in the pan? Times columnists Anita Chabria and Mark C. Baraback disagree on Newsom's presidential prospects and more. Here the two hash out some of their differences. Baraback, so the presidential race is over, Anita? Should I just spend the next few years backpacking and snowboarding in the Sierra and return in January 2029 to watch Newsom iterate, meet the momentum, and with intentionality be sworn in as our nation's 48th president? Chabria, should definitely spend as much time in the Sierra as possible, but I have no idea if Newsom will be elected president in 2028 or not. That's about a million light years away in political terms. But I think he has a shot and is the front runner for the nomination right now. He set himself up as the quick to punch foil to President Trump and increasingly as the leader of the Democratic Party. Last week, he visited Brazil for a climate summit that Trump ghosted, making Newsom the American presence. And in a recent, albeit small, poll, in a hypothetical race against J.D. Vance, the current Republican favorite, Newsom led by 3 points, though unexpectedly respondents still picked Kamala Harris as their choice for the nomination. To me, that shows he's popular across the country. But you've warned that Californians have a tough time pulling voters in other states. Do you think his Golden State roots will kill off his contender status? Baraback, I make no predictions. I'm smart enough to know that I'm not smart enough to know. And after 2016 and the election of Trump, the words can't, not, won't, never, ever are permanently stricken from my political vocabulary. That said, I wouldn't stake more than a penny, which may eventually be worth something, as they're phased out of our currency, on Newsom's chances. Look, I yield to no one in my love of California, and I've got the Golden State tats to prove it. but I'm mindful of how the rest of the country views the state and those politicians who bear a California return address. You can be sure whoever runs against Newsom, and I'm talking about his fellow Democrats, not just Republicans, will have a great deal to say about the state's much higher than elsewhere housing, grocery, and gas prices, and our shameful rates of poverty and homelessness. Not a great look for Newsom, especially when affordability is all the political rage these days. And while I understand the governor's appeal, fight, 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 I liken it to the fleeting fancy that, for a time, made attorney, convicted swindler, and rhetorical battered ram Michael Avenatti seriously discussed as a Democratic presidential contender. At a certain point, and we're still years away, people will assess their candidates with their head, not viscera. As for the polling, ask Edmund Muskie, Gary Hart, or Hillary Clinton how much those soundings matter at this exceedingly early stage of a presidential race. Well, you can't ask Muskie, because the former Maine senator is dead. But all three were early front runners who failed to win the Democratic nomination. Chabria, I don't argue the historical case against the Golden State, but I will argue that these people are different. These are different days. People don't vote with their heads. Fight me on that. They vote on charisma, tribalism, and maybe some hope and fear. They vote on issues as social media explains them. They vote on memes. There's no reality in which our next president is rationally evaluated on their record. Our current president has a criminal one, and that didn't make a difference. But I do think, as we have talked about ad nauseum, that democracy is in peril. Trump has threatened to run for a third term and recently lamented that his cabinet doesn't show him the same kind of fear that Chinese President Xi Jinping gets from his top advisors. And Vance should get the chance to run, has made it clear he's a Christian nationalist who would like to deport nearly every immigrant he can catch, legal or not. Being a Californian may not be the drawback it's historically been, especially if Trump's authoritarianism continues and this state remains a symbol of resistance. But our governor does have an immediate scandal to contend with. His former chief of staff, Dana Williamson, was just arrested on federal corruption charges. Do you think that hurts him? Baraback. It shouldn't. There's no evidence of wrongdoing on Newsom's part. His opponents will try the guilt by association thing. Some already have. But unless something damning surfaces, there's no reason the governor should be punished for the alleged wrongdoing of Williamson or others charged in the case. But let's get back to 2028 and the presidential race. I think one of our fundamental disagreements is that I believe people do very much evaluate a candidate's ideas and records. Not in granular fashion or the way some chin-stroking political scientists might, but voters do want to know how and whether a candidate can materially improve their lives. There are, of course, a great many who'd reflexively support Donald Trump, or Donald Duck, for that matter, if he's the Republican nominee. Same goes for Democrats who'd vote for Gavin Newsom or Gavin Floyd if either were the party's nominee. While Newsom played baseball in college, Floyd pitched 13 seasons in the major leagues, so he's got that advantage over the governor. But I'm talking about those voters who are up for grabs, the ones who decide competitive races, who make a very rational decision based on their lives and livelihoods, and which candidate they believe will benefit them most. Granted, the dynamic is a bit different in a primary contest, but even then, we've seen time and again the whole dated married phenomenon. As in 2004, when a lot of Democrats dated Howard Dean early in the primary season, but married John Kerry. I see electability, as in the perception of which Democrat can win the general election, being right up there alongside affordability when it comes time for primary voters to make their 2028 pick. Chabria, no doubt affordability will be a huge issue, especially if consumer confidence continues to plummet. And we are sure to hear criticisms of California, many of which are fair, as you point out. Housing costs too much, homelessness remains intractable. But these are also problems across the United States and require deeper fixes than even this economically powerful state can handle alone. More than past record, future vision is going to matter. What's the plan? It can't be vague tax credits or even student loan forgiveness. We need a concrete vision for an economy that brings not just more of the basics like homes, but the kind of long-term economic stability, higher wages, good schools, living wage jobs that makes the middle class stronger and attainable. The Democrat who can lay out that vision while simultaneously continuing to battle the authoritarian creep currently eating our democracy will, in my humble opinion, be the one voters choose, regardless of origin story. After all, it was that message of change with hope that gave us President Obama, another candidate many considered a long shot at first. Mark, are there any 2020 prospects you're keeping a particularly close eye on? Barabak, I'm taking things one election at a time, starting with the 2026 midterms, which include an open seat race for governor here in California. The results in November 2026 will go a long way towards shaping the dynamic in November 2028. That said, there's no shortage of Democrats eyeing the race, too many to list here. Will the number surpass the 29 major Democrats who ran in 2020? We'll see. I do agree with you that to stand any chance of winning in 2028, whoever Democrats nominate will have to offer some serious and substantive ideas on how many people's lives materially better. I imperil democracy and scary authoritarianism aside, it's still the economy, stupid. Which brings us full circle, back to our gallivanting governor. He may be winning fans on building his national fundraising base with his snippy memes and zippy Trump putdowns, but even if he gets past the built-in anti-California bias among so many voters outside our blessed state, he's not going to snark his way into the White House. I'd wager more than a penny on that. That was Sizing Up the Prospects for Newsom in 2028 by Anita Chabria and Mark C. Barabak, columnists, from the Perspective section of the Los Angeles Times, Sunday, November 16, 2025. And so with the time that we have left, let's run down a list of those who are potentially interested in running for president on all sides, starting on the Republican side. These are individuals who have expressed interest in running for the Republican presidential nomination as of right now. Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky, Secretary of State Marco Rubio from Florida, businessman Eric Trump from Florida, and Vice President J.D. Vance from Ohio. And these are ones that are speculated by the media for as potential Republican candidates. Governor Greg Abbott of Texas, Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, Senator Ted Cruz from Texas, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, former Ambassador Nikki Haley from South Carolina, Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders of Arkansas, and outgoing Governor Glenn Youngkin of Virginia. Though it has declined to be candidates include Mike Braun, the governor of Indiana, Tucker Carlson, media proprietor and podcast host from Maine, Spencer Cox, the governor of Utah, Mike Johnson, the speaker of the House of Representatives from Louisiana, Adam Kinzinger, former U.S. representative from Illinois, Marjorie Taylor Greene, former U.S. rep from Georgia, David McCormick, U.S. senator from Pennsylvania, and Donald Trump Jr., businessman and son of the incumbent president. And on the Democratic side, these are ones who have expressed an interest in running for the Democratic nomination. Governor Andy Beshear of Kentucky, Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey, former Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg from Michigan, former Ambassador Rahm Emanuel from Illinois, Governor Josh Green of Hawaii, former Vice President Kamala Harris from California, and current Governor Gavin Newsom of California. And those that are speculated by the media as potential Democratic candidates are Senator Mark Kelly from Arizona, Governor Phil Murphy of New Jersey, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Representative from New York, Governor J.B. Pritzker of Illinois, activist and political commentator John Stewart from New Jersey, Senator Chris Van Hollen from Maryland, Senator Raphael Warnock from Georgia, and Governor Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan. Those that have declined to be candidates include Joe Biden, former president, Stephen Colbert, comedian and host of The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, Ruben Gallego, U.S. Senator from Arizona, Josh Gottheimer, U.S. Representative from New Jersey, John Hickenlooper, Senator from Colorado, Ro Khanna, Representative from California, Wes Moore, the Governor of Maryland, Chris Murphy, U.S. Senator from Connecticut, Michelle Obama, former First Lady, Jared Polis, Governor of Colorado, Bernie Sanders, Senator from Vermont, Alyssa Slotkin, U.S. Senator from Michigan, and Tim Walz, the Governor of Minnesota. At this time, the only one who's mentioned as a third-party candidate includes former Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia. Those that are declined to be third-party candidates are Mark Cuban, billionaire owner of the Dallas Mavericks, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the current Secretary of Health and Human Services, and Kristen Sinema, senator, former senator from Arizona. Folks, that'll do it for this edition of Voter Information. Until next time, everybody, this is your election guru, Mark Braun, telling you happy voting and, of course, peace.